Welcome to Access Utah. There we go. It's the music. I'm already just stumbling all over myself. Good morning and welcome to Access Utah. I am not Tom Williams, but Tom Williams is in here.
I'm here.
And we have Carrie Bringhurst as well.
Well, I'll introduce you. This is Frank Mueller. He is the new station manager at Utah Public Radio. And yes, I'm here along with Tom Williams and Frank.
And I have big and stylish shoes to fill. So we're going to get started in learning about some of the over 50 years combined history with
yeah,
the
two Tom
of
and
your
I
hair.
Are retiring. And Frank, we were saying before we went on the air, I'm more excited to hear you on the air this morning than I am to talk about my past, because I'm excited about Utah Public Radio's future. Frank, I think we should begin with you telling a little bit about yourself, and then, let's look to the future before we talk about the past.
I feel like this is already being hijacked. Right?
I'm sorry, I love it.
Carrie does, so she's doing what she does.
You know, and I do want to talk a little more about the future also as we get towards the end of the interview. But I will say, you're right, Carrie. I think that there's some exciting things ahead for Utah Public Radio, and that's something that it's always difficult when you have a transition at a station, right? When you go from kind of the voices and the people and the personalities that you're accustomed to somebody new, somebody different. There's a wonder, right? What's going to happen, right? What is this going to mean? But one of the things that I think is so wonderful, and maybe a lot of people behind or kind of just the casual listener doesn't realize, that there's a very solid foundation that the two of you have built during your time here, in combination with a wonderful team that has really been established.
Aren't
that
they great?
I think, oh, it's so great.
The staff here at UPR is excellent.
Yeah. And I think that combination there really has helped shape the path of where the station will go in the future. It's also supported by the strength of the university. Utah State University has really made a commitment to what it's going to mean to be part of this great institution,
exactly,
right? That serves the state, that really has, especially under the newer president, Brad Mortensen, right? That has really said, as a land-grant institution, we have an obligation to the state of Utah. And so, you know, a lot of what I see us doing here at UPR is reflective of that, right? Is reflective of our mission to really serve everybody throughout the state and to really be able to continue to advance learning and engagement and spreading of culture and all of the important things that people both expect from UPR and where there's opportunities for us to expand even further in that area.
I just want to add that I feel your enthusiasm. And you are not new to land-grant universities. You come here from Penn State, and you understand that role that the public radio station of a land-grant university can play in helping share information through our statewide campuses, through our statewide broadcast services. And also, as we're going to be talking about some of the changes that Utah Public Radio has been through, Utah Public Radio is not the only public media organization going through changes. And as you said, Utah State University has really emphasized their the value of Utah Public Radio. And we're part of the College of Agriculture and Applied Sciences, and that's been exciting with the combination of those different colleges into one.
Yeah. So the Arts and Sciences College here, the Dean of Arts and Sciences, the part of journalism, the chair of the department for communication, mm-hmm. like all of these people have really. In fact, I was just at a couple of different events last week. You were there as well, and the level of enthusiasm around the station is just, it's infectious. Right.
It is.
You know,
Tom, I don't know if you had a chance to see, you know, they had cookies. This was for the college retreat.
Frank brought me one.
They had, you know, the cookies where you can have the stamp, the colorful stamp. The Quonset Hut, the home of Utah Public Radio, was on a cookie. And I'm like, wow, we've made it. I can leave UPR feeling proud.
We made the cookie.
Yes, we made the cookie. The Quonset Hut is now iconic.
We are. That's how you know. Right?
That's how you know.
That's how you know. Well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit on you, because I do think that our listeners are very interested in. They've heard both of you for years on this station, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tom with Access Utah and some of the other programs. You've been on Morning Edition for. You know, many, we won't say how long with both, right?
But 2007.
So a good amount of time, right?
Yeah.
And so people have welcomed you into their homes, into their cars,
into their showers. When the shower radio became a thing, I had somebody say to me, I shower with you every morning. And I was like, I don't know. Let's rephrase that.
Yeah, that's interesting, right?
Or I wake up to you every morning. Okay.
All right.
Because it is, you wonder, are people out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it amazes me how many people will come up to me, and it just Tom, I think it's more often for you because your voice is so recognizable that people will hear you talking to somebody else, and automatically it'll take them to Utah Public Radio.
Yeah, it does happen a lot. Yeah, a lot at church, a lot at other places. people say, "Now wait a minute, are you on public radio?"
Nice.
Yeah, so it's nice to meet people that way.
And then they close our eyes when they see us and go, my gosh, you don't look anything like you sound.
Right. I usually apologize for ruining their
impression.
Mental image of me.
The old saying is Mama always said I had a face for radio.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what we say, too.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. There's for our listeners who may not be aware, you know, we're thankful to be behind microphones, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Many people don't recognize that, even though really professionally you both, I guess, have grown acquaintances more here, that you grew up in the same area.
That's right. I don't know if Carrie likes this, but I always say Carrie was a celebrity. She really was. Middle school, high school. So when Alan White found you?
When I, the summer before my first year in high school, before my sophomore year.
Okay, yeah. So Alan White, who was running KVEL.
He's the news director.
The hot one. This was the main AM station in the Uinta Basin. In Vernal, and so Carrie was on the air with news, I think you were doing?
Yeah, I would head over after school, and my first newscast was, gosh, like 3:03, right after the rest of the story. Who did the rest
Paul
of it?
Harvey.
Paul
Harvey.
Harvey, yeah. Right after Paul Harvey.
That's great, yeah.
And I would do, you know, AP news, Alan had written news for me, and then I was responsible for gathering the news for the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be there from like 3 to 9.
Yeah,
wow.
After school every day.
So what? So Alan must have seen something. You weren't even in high school yet.
No, I did kind of a radio day.
Oh, okay.
They came into our choir class and said, "Hey, we'd love to have you just come and read some announcements on the air." They invited anyone to come,
mm-hmm.
and. My girlfriend and I were like, hey, that sounds like fun. So we went in, read some ads on the air, and Alan contacted me and offered me a job at KVEL. Honestly, I really thought I would be cleaning toilets and replacing paper towels. I didn't even comprehend what it would mean to be able to do this. And it was incredible because I had a press pass to the Vernal Police Department when I was 14 years old.
Wow. Amazing.
And I still have that press pass.
You do?
I do.
Wow.
I do.
So did the news bug kind of, were you into news before that happened?
Not, I mean, our family was always very involved in community, and we would watch the news together. We would talk about issues. My mother was political in her activity in the community. Both were educators. So there was a lot of conversation about things that were happening. And I remember having conversations with my grandparents. They were aware of world and local happenings. So I don't know. I mean, who doesn't think about how much fun it would be, you know, to go around and gossip and get paid for it.
That's right.
I did appreciate that I had to learn what it meant to share facts and information. And that took me a minute, because there's a difference between like a DJ and somebody that does news. But I've always been pretty serious as far as my personality. So it fit in nicely. And I'm very curious. I love to find out information, and I love to share information, and I'm just better at sharing facts than I think I was when I was 14, except for what was written down. But yeah, I would go to city council meetings and other meetings in the evening, do a lot of telephone interviews. I remember interviewing Gail McCackney. He was an attorney there, and I think he was also our representative on the state legislature, and I had called him to interview him about something. And I would, of course, record the interviews on reel-to-reel. You guys know what reel-to-reel is. And then I would then transfer that onto a track cassette, not cart. We would call them a cart. Mm-hmm. But I remember doing the story, getting all ready, playing it, getting a phone call right after that from Gail McCackney saying, "Hey, you didn't tell me you were recording this." So,
Oh, you had to learn some things.
I had to learn some things. He's like, right, you know, in actuality, that's kind of illegal. Yeah. You can't really do that. Right. So, but, you know, he knew me. We had known, our families had known each other. My mom had taught his children. So it was a great community in which to have some grace shown to me. And people really did take an interest in helping me pursue this. And Alan was amazing, Alan White. And still to this day, you know, I'm in touch with him. He bought a station in Preston, Idaho, and no longer owns that station. But he really was the best mentor you could ever have. And when it was time for me to graduate high school, I started looking at radio jobs and just happened to get a job at what is now the Radio Ranch, Q92. So I did commercial news for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then was fortunate enough to become familiar with public radio. Tom, I think you were more familiar with public radio that was available in Vernal.
Yeah, my dad, especially my parents, were thrilled when we finally got KUSU in Vernal. Dad had grown up on when the actual networks were, you know, highbrow. So NBC Blue Network, you could get opera, for example, when he was growing up in Pocatello. But you get to Vernal and you get some choices, but not all the choices he wanted. And finally, public radio came and he was thrilled. So I was familiar with it a little bit from that, right?
So was it your parents' interest that bit the radio bug for you, or what bit the radio bug for you?
I was on the high school station. So Kerry was on the hot one, and I was just in the little, you know, the high school station. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. Curtis May, our math teacher, was an interesting fellow. He also ran the community calendar, classical music concerts. Wonderful guy. He ran the station, and so I was on the high school station and really enjoyed that.
That was the first time I saw Tom.
Yeah,
was because my dad also taught at the high school, and my dad had to go over and talk to Mr. May, and I walked in, and Tom was sitting. It was kind of a Quonset Hut building, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So you've just kind of lived your life in a military building for your whole career. But he was sitting there, had really long hair, hippie, total hippie, and he was doing his show.
Yeah.
So
I was shoulder length hair. People don't believe it. In fact, one of my Warren Black, we're dropping names here.
You'd know these people.
Warren always warned me, hey, that long hair, you're going to end up bald. So he was prophetic, Warren was. Anyway, and I'll just throw in another anecdote. I think the people in high school viewed me as that weird kid, but I think they liked me, but I was marched to the drum, the beat of my own drum. And I thought my peers were idiots, so no peer pressure for me. I remember a cowboy.
Sorry, Ron Stagg.
No, I like Ron. I liked all my my peers, but I thought correctly. Well, these are high school people. Why would I follow them? Right? Because they're high school people. They're trying to figure it out like I am. Anyway, I got to school one day, and this cowboy guy. I still don't remember. I don't think I even knew him. He said, hey, if you don't cut your hair by tomorrow, I'm going to cut it off with this pocket knife.
Oh, wow.
We grew up in a really, really rough area. Yeah. That Vernal was just really.
In fact, you took a week off for the deer hunt, right?
Yeah, we did.
So, and I thought, well, all right, that'll be interesting tomorrow to see what happens. Nothing happened. I said, okay, buddy. But anyway. So
I'm curious about your high school show. What was the content?
You know, I have no memory at all of what I even did. I remember being on the air. I don't remember what I think I spun some records, but I have no memory of what we were doing. Yeah. And this was in a
That comes with age, by the way.
It comes with age. And if we were playing popular music, that was a great era. That was Fleetwood Mac and Eagles and Styx and anyway, but I have no memory at all other than being on the air and enjoying it. But
I do remember my first, I guess, interaction with radio was when my brother and I called in and made a radio request.
Mm.
And it was Styx. Sail Away. Yeah. And that was really cool to me to have somebody come on the air and say, hey, here's this request from, you know. So radio has been a magical thing for me. I don't know that I expected to have this type of career. I kind of just fell into the news. And in fact, I worked here for 4 years and then started having a family and left and really didn't expect to come back. So that was kind of a nice, pleasant happening, life happening.
I started here with work study. At the time, they were using work study students. There was a special sub-channel on KUSU. If you were blind or visually impaired, you could get a special receiver and receive this signal. And so I and other students would read the Herald Journal, the local paper, in its entirety for visually impaired. And Richard Meng, the program director at the time, used that as a kind of a minor leagues, an auditioning period. So he liked my voice, and he offered me a part-time job.
All right. Yeah. So coming up after the break, I want to dive more into your experience at UPR. So we'll hear more about that right here on Access Utah, coming up next. Welcome back to Access Utah. I am the guest host today, Frank Muller, in with the real host, Tom Williams, who is being interviewed, along with Carrie Bringhurst. Both Tom and Carrie will be retiring, sadly, from UPR here. Carrie at the end of this month, Tom at the end of next month. And so a great opportunity for us to just take some time and do a kind of a retrospective on your time here, on what led you to UPR, and a little bit of kind of what has developed over your time here. So I before the break, we talked about that history leading up to your point in time here at UPR. I do want to dive into that time at UPR. So, Carrie, you've had a kind of a split career here at UPR.
Yeah, after I graduated Utah State University in broadcasting, I actually started working over at the theater department doing their marketing. And not soon after getting that job, there was an opening here for, I believe my assignment was to do a 5-minute feature every day that would air at the bottom of Morning Edition. And now today, that would not seem like a huge thing because we can do interviews over the phone. We can edit digitally. And really, a five-minute interview is nothing for me to do today. But at that time, I had to do all of my interviews with a tape recorder. So I would either have to get people to come in here or I would have to hustle out and record people and do the interviews. But then I would have to come back and take that cassette recording and transfer it to a reel-to-reel tape. And we're talking in live time. So if it was a 20-minute interview, it would take me 20 minutes to transfer that content onto a reel-to-reel tape. And then I would have to edit that down to 5 minutes using a razor blade and a white grease pencil and this little metal contraption that allowed you to use the razor blade to splice. We would call that splicing. And then you would have a piece of white tape that you would splice that together. And I can't tell you how many times I was grabbing tape out of the garbage can.
Yes. I was just going to say, if you made a mistaken cut, then you'd have to look on the floor or wherever you put the
Yeah, so and then you're like,
you're literally taking a razor blade and cutting away
parts
of the tape and then taping the other pieces back together.
Taping them together and hoping that you didn't cut off the T on that.
And if you did, you'd have to find that little teeny piece of tape that contained the T.
Yeah. And I remember being here till midnight sometimes. My first interview, I was so excited. I came back, listened to it, and all you could hear was a lawnmower.
Oh, no.
Because the window was open during the interview. So, I mean, it just goes to show you the progress that it takes. You have to train your ear. You have to be thinking about what the person's saying while they're saying it and be thinking about what you're going to ask to follow up so that it sounds conversational. And that was a great experience for me. And I had my first child during that time. And actually, I had two children while I was working here those 4 years. And then my second child was born with something called Williams syndrome. So I chose to stay home with my boys and spend some time and then had two more boys. And the last one went off to school. And my girlfriend and I sat on my couch twiddling our thumbs going, what are we going to do next? And she said, well, you know, we could get jobs. We could go back to work. And we had done things. We had actually had a video production company together and I had worked as city recorder different places. But to go back full time and so fortunate to be able to come back to Utah Public Radio. I didn't think radio news would be in my future again.
You'd been in a band as well.
I was abandoned. No, yeah. I did. I sang in a folk music group.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
So when you came back, because I know that you you became the news director,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you become news director? How did you become Morning Edition host? How did you make that transition from mm-hmm. doing one news piece to really kind of, and we'll get to co-manager,
well,
but eventually.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I had always gathered news and done news. So that felt more comfortable to me than doing the features every day, doing breaking news or updating news. Hosting Morning Edition, I'd never hosted a program before. Had a lot of support from Friend Weller, who helped me understand. And I fortunately had continued developing my skills as far as being able to do digital editing. And because we had this video production company, yes, I did wedding videos for a long time. And so I still had those skills. But it was a transition. It was exciting. It was really exciting to, again, think about what it would take to put a five-minute piece together at that point versus my first run at Utah Public Radio and not using reel-to-reel. So I had a lot of help and support from our station manager at the time, Kathy Ives. She was very patient. And the biggest challenge for me, Frank, was getting up that early in the morning. And I would be exhausted after doing, you know, 3 hours of live radio. And I would go in my office and shut the door and take a nap. And I know she was thinking, what is going on here? Did we make a mistake? But everybody just has supported me, that, which is true today. Everybody here just supports each other, and we really recognize people's skills and help them build those talents. And it's been a great opportunity, and so much have enjoyed getting to know our listeners in this capacity the past 8 years, joining with Tom and helping manage the station.
Pretty amazing. So, Tom, you were telling us before the break about your time starting out reading in a reading service on a sub channel. So how did you make the jump from there to host of Access Utah and program director for the station?
Well, Richard hired me as a part-time announcer. So I worked for several years as an announcer, weekends. We used to sign off, as many stations did. So we didn't broadcast night. Then eventually we became a 24-hour service. And so I worked several overnight shifts, or had one break an hour. And you know, don't tell Richard this, but I would take an alarm clock. I would sleep for 50 minutes.
I've been there, done that.
And wake up, do the break, and then, you know, go back to sleep for 45 minutes. Now, thank heaven for automation, right? I always say that's our most important staff member. But from there, when our top boss retired, Richard became the station manager, and he created a position for me called operations coordinator. So I was then supervising the part-time announcers and doing some other things, work swing shift at that point, which I was so happy to get that job because I was working as a graveyard security guard out at the cheese plant at that point, which was fine work, but it was mind-numbingly boring. So I was so happy to get this full-time position at UPR. And then from there, you know, operations coordinator for several years, developed as a part-time announcer. I was on Saturdays. We had a gap after the Metropolitan Opera until the next, program. So I thought, well, let's formalize this. And so I created a program called Opera Saturday.
Did you sing?
A great program. Yeah. Did you sing?
No. Listeners would not have wanted to hear me sing. So I played, and I was an opera buff. My dad's a big opera buff. He would, by the way, put eight kids in the station wagon, drive from Vernal to Salt Lake to go to the opera. And
wow. We'd go to Lagoon. That tells you a lot about the different lifestyles we live.
So one of the great joys of my dad's life that to hear his son do an opera program over there. So
did not that singing.
Not singing.
It was a great program, though, and very, very popular. And I miss having the albums, the opera vinyls here, because it made
albums,
me feel smart to work at a place where we had a room full of, you know, opera selections.
Yeah. And I would take some of those opera LPs home to my apartment late at night. My roommate's sleeping. I'd put on the headphones. And I didn't know all of opera. I knew a little bit of opera. But through this program, I came to know a lot more. I remember specifically a vivid memory lying on the floor in my apartment, headphones on, discovering Bellini's Norma with Joan Sutherland singing. And Bellini famously said he wanted people to weep, shudder, and die through music. I was definitely weeping, shuddering, and dying, and so discovering this wonderful music. So then this went along, and then Kathy Ives, who Carrie mentioned, wonderful station manager, one day she came in and said, okay, Carrie, you're news director. And Tom, you're program director.
Mm-hmm.
No increase in pay, but we got... Mm-hmm.
I wasn't actually hired to be news director. I was hired specifically to host Morning Edition. So those were positions that, you know, were needed. And again, one thing we do really well here at Utah Public Radio is look at people's skill set and give them opportunities to try and build that and also benefit the station at the same time. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so Access Utah, that we had a kind of a collection of programs, half-hour programs that we would put in the kind of the 9, 10 o'clock hour. Then we decided to consolidate those. Lee Austin became the host of what became Access Utah, so he's the founder of the program. And at a certain point, I think he was looking for some help. He didn't want to do every last single hour of the program. So he asked me, hey, have you had any interest in, would you have any interest in interviewing? And I said, yeah, I think I would. And so he was very wise. He said, your first interview ought to be something that you're very familiar with, so you'll feel a little more confident. And so we made it opera. So I interviewed, my first interview was Leslie Peterson, who was running Utah Opera. And I didn't sleep the night before. So nervous, so nervous. The worries that you have will exhaust my questions the first 10 minutes, then we'll have dead air. I'll be busted down to asking your favorite color. By the way, that's always my tap-out question.
If, oh,
my,
nice.
if I ask you your favorite color, the interview is probably done. But and previous to that, I'd talked to a wonderful conductor with Utah Festival Opera as my first recorded interview. By the way, near the end of that interview, a very polite gentleman, he was looking at his watch. Henry Holt is his name. He's deceased now. Indicating, well, you've exhausted the of your questions, Tom. And by the way, I always tell people the most important thing as an interviewer is listening. You have to be able to listen, because your guest might say something absolutely interesting. And if I go back and listen to my early interviews, I'm yelling at myself, because I've got my, it's obvious I have my list of questions. And I don't care what the guest said. I'm going to question number two. They might have said something incredibly interesting, and I did. So I had to learn over time to, okay, let's just have a conversation.
Yeah, that is a skill set that has to be acquired. But I have to say, I also worked with Lee Austin. In fact, yeah, Lee hired me for my first stint here at Utah Public Radio for that five-minute segment. Lee and Tom are the best interviewers that I've ever known, and fortunate to be able to work with both of them. It was intimidating, because there were times when I had to fill in for Lee a couple of times, and I did not have that listening skill yet. And you're right, you do just kind of go through the questions and you're not really having a conversation, and that's not what people want to listen to. But being able to work with both Lee and Tom and just watch them as they put people at ease to where they could open up and really share and dive into information. I especially loved Lee's interviews in regards to issues of politics and policy and kind of the controversial topics that he was able to discuss. He was great at that. And Tom, your book interviews and just your human interest and your behind the headlines conversations are top notch. I mean, what a pleasure to be able to work with both of you.
Lee, I still remember, he set the standard. He said, Tom, at UPR, we read the book, right? And we come up with our own questions. And I've had guests tell me that they're large operations or television stations or certain outlets where it's very obvious that the interviewer has not read one word of your work and has been handed some questions and is kind of going off of those.
Right.
Lee told me we don't operate like that. We digest the material, we're prepared. So that's, you set the standard.
You also, that listening skill is really important, probably more just for my entertainment. But I can tell when the host has done the interview versus when a producer has done the interview and then inserted the host questions. So that's another benefit of doing radio. And I think that's, Tom, I don't know about you, but I have a hard time with some of these other mediums that we're required to work in. I didn't go into print for reason. I don't spell well. But all of a sudden, we're having to write content to be on a computer, on a website that's going to be there forever. No. That's not my skill set. I love listening to people. I love listening to people's stories. I love hearing their voices crack or them getting emotional. And I love descriptive storytelling, where you can visualize for yourself what's happening through natural sound or the written word. I love radio and I love listening.
Yeah.
And I like it when I catch those little things like nobody else could hear that. But I recognize that, again, the interview was done by somebody else and they've had the host ask the question and just inserted that.
I don't
think that's a bad thing, yeah. But mm-hmm. I do have a lot of respect for Tom and the fact that he does his research and he's passionate about it. You can hear that in the interviews.
Yeah, I always say I've got the perfect job for a guy who has a short attention span and is interested in everything. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. Perfect, the job. I was just going to say that listening, I had a memory of watching Craig Hislop do an interview. People in Logan will know him, works at the commercial station and sportscaster.
He hosted Morning Edition.
And he hosted Morning Edition for us before Kerry. Sportscaster of the year previous. Anyway, I would look through the glass at him doing the interviews. He'd have his eyes closed. This is not with a person in the studio, but with, you know, someone on phone.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to listen. I think he was trying to listen better with his eyes closed. The radio, right? Because mm-hmm. your mind provides the visuals.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I do that after I produce a segment. I will always listen to it with my eyes closed. So I can just hear of any glitches or anything that sounds disruptive because you don't want the audience to be distracted.
Right.
You don't want to break that relationship. It's a relationship with the listener. You want to make sure that they're able to stay connected in that moment and have that experience, whether it be in their driveway, their shower, as we mentioned earlier, you know, whatever. And that's kind of a beautiful thing. You know, photographers, they have the visual beauty that they see that I probably don't recognize, but I pick up on things in people's tone, music, because of these skills that we've been able to develop.
The other thing Kerry mentioned, storytelling, that's central. It's primal, right? It's human. And it goes back to the very beginning of humans, the stories. Everybody has an interesting story. A lot of people feel they don't. Everybody has an interesting story. And so that's what we've tried to do is bring out those stories. And that's powerful. That's you know, you don't get rich in public radio, but you certainly, we believe in the mission, and that's one of the reasons why.
Indeed. Well, coming up after the break, I want to dive in. Both of you have brought up mentors, and I want to dive in a little bit to your time as co-managers of the station and continuing to develop that mentorship role here at UPR. So that's coming up next right here on Access Utah. And welcome back to Access Utah. I am the temporary host. Please don't think I'm taking over this role permanently. And I do want to stress that although we have mentioned that Tom and Kerry are both retiring here, that Tom will remain on board for the foreseeable future as host of Access Utah.
That's right.
Which people, I'm sure, were probably a little concerned when they heard a different host behind the mic.
Yeah.
But this is only a special program for today. As I mentioned, Kerry and Tom are both retiring. Kerry at the end of this month, Tom at the end of next month. And so it's an opportunity for us to really be able to get a retrospective on your time here at Utah Public Radio. As we were talking before the break, we talked a little bit about the mentors who played so much of a role in your lives as you have come up through the ranks here at Utah Public Radio. And it's a philosophy that, you know, being new here, it's a philosophy that I've really enjoyed seeing and being able to get into. But I want to talk a little bit about the time about 8 years ago, right, when the two of you were asked to be co-managers of the station. What led to that?
Desperation.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then what have you had the opportunity to develop? Because I see the fruits of it, right? Working here, I get to see the fruits of it. But a lot of our listeners may not be aware of really what has developed over that time as you've stood here as co-managers of the station.
Well, I will say just on the timing, Carrie can talk to, you know, some of the other aspects of it, but February 2019 is when we were appointed. So if you look at that timeline, within a year we were into COVID. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, big sort of a tent pole. And then near the end of our 10-year rescission. So, we, you know, and that kind of maybe sets the tone. It's, I view it as kind of an emergency appointment where, mm-hmm. you know, we're in bad financial straits and our mandate was
raise money.
Yeah. Get into a better financial position.
Mm-hmm. I think we were given 3 years to get things kind of situated. It wasn't that we were, it wasn't where we were at that time was not sustainable, right? So we needed to look at some different ways of doing things and focus more on fundraising, philanthropic relationships, networking, just really expanding on what had been happening, but with a little more fervor. And our programming was always something that was appreciated, and we didn't have to do a lot of changes when it came to the programming. We adjusted a few things, but it really was coming to terms with the fact that we were valuable and that the community and those who listened and the university would pay for that. And I don't know. I think we kind of liked the idea that we could, we didn't want to have to ask people. We just wanted to provide this service and not, we don't want to ask people for money, right? We just want to do it. That's the right thing to do because people should just be able to listen and have information. It's better for society. It helps us grow and learn. So it took me some time to wrap my head around the fact that we owed the community and our listeners by being responsible fiscally and trusting that if we had a product that was valued and necessary, that they would support that. So it was kind of a trust exercise for me. And also figuring out how to go about having those conversations because I had never done that before. And the first time we strategized and thought, okay, you know, we know this person loves Utah Public Radio. Maybe they don't know that it's costing more for us to purchase programs from National Public Radio. And they probably don't realize that the money that we're raising is also going to help pay for staff. Maybe they're assuming that the university's paying for all of our staff members to gather news and run this the student internship program. So we strategized. We came up with some ideas for scholarships so that we could then use that money to pay the students to do the work. We wanted students to be able to have a learning opportunity that would lead to a career and have skills. So we started scholarships. And then, yes, I started going into people's living rooms and talking to them about what was important to them and talking about whether they felt comfortable supporting that financially. And the first time somebody says yes, it changes your entire perspective about what we do and how important it is and that it matters and that we give voice to the voiceless and that we help people become better aware of things that can help them make better decisions and we can function better as a society and a community. It's been very fulfilling.
So that had to be a big shift going from going into living rooms on somebody's radio to physically going into somebody's living room to ask them to support the station. How did you make that shift?
Well, I think I again had to come to that realization that what I was doing as a reporter was important and necessary. And so if I could take that passion and combine that with the passion of the listeners, it actually, it was a beautiful thing. And we just continued to get more and more support because I don't think people understood how public media works. I mean, we're a nonprofit business. And I'd never operated a business before. So that's where Tom came in. I said, I am happy. I'm a people person. Don't ask me to do numbers. Don't ask me to do math and see my inferiority of not doing spelling and math. And my mom, I know you're listening, and she was my sixth grade teacher, and she will be shaking her head saying, yes, math and spelling, talking and interacting with people, no problem, but math and spelling. So, I mean, I was quite clear with Tom and our Dean, Joe Ward, that I won't do the math. I can bring in money. I'm happy to do that part of numbers because I love people. And so once I found that connection that we both, the donor and Utah Public Radio, we really shared the same passion, then it's been really fun because we have that really important connection.
Now, see, I'm not going to do it. Here's where I would go down that rabbit hole. How was it to have your mother be your sixth grade teacher? I didn't even know that, but we won't do that here. Well, here's where I want to brag on Carrie. So when we were appointed, Carrie said, we decided, well, I'll handle programming and kind of the day-to-day, and Carrie, with no previous experience, I think, would become our chief development person and would go out and raise the money. And typical of her, she went out and did it brilliantly.
I had a lot
learned,
of help.
Had a lot of help, but learned it and did it and raised a lot of money, including writing grants and, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, grants during COVID, that was fun. Yeah.
The fun doesn't sound quite in your voice there.
Oh, it was, COVID was a scary time. I mean, we were worried about having things work out for us just in normal operations, but then COVID hit and we're not seeing each other. We're disinfecting this place up and down. We can't be together. We're trying to figure out how to not make each other sick. We didn't know how dangerous this was. How are we going to do interviews? What emergency information did we need to provide? I remember when they would have the test sites and the shots and all of that. I don't know. It was just such a crazy time. And I was basically housed in my basement trying to write grants and had never written grants. But again, once you realize your product is valuable and that passion sets in, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. And I was just a reference conversation you and I had, Frank, just a couple of days ago. Carrie and I are getting credit here, I guess, incident to us retiring. I'm a little uncomfortable with that because it really is the team. Mm-hmm. It's the staff who are brilliant, just great.
Yeah, and very creative, very hands-on. We work together on ideas. I mean, we're not afraid to have conversations and say, I don't know if that will really work, but always looking to resources of how other stations are doing things, which I think is really critical right now, given the loss of our CPB funding in recent years. Working together as a network of public media outlets, not just with what we have here and now. So that's been great, too, is getting to know other stations and how they're doing things and learning from them.
You know, we could spend probably another solid hour talking through different things, but in the last couple of minutes that we have here, I do want to, we talked at the very beginning about the vision for the future, and I want to hear from the two of you kind of what you would like to see over the, you know, next few or several years for UPR. You have helped build the foundation with many others. You are now part of the foundation of what makes UPR. What do you want to see going forward?
I would say that we're on a great trajectory. And Carrie's been referencing what people find valuable in Utah Public Radio and public radio in general, right? The storytelling, right? The in-depth news that, you know, I'm going to sound like I'm in the fundraiser right now, but it is very true. I just want to see that continue on a more solid financial footing. And I want to be hearing, not that I'll be alive, but I want to hear, you know, Utah Public Radio in the year 2070.
Well, in one way of doing that, I'm really going to go into fundraising mode. Tom, you and I have set up a legacy endowment, and part of that endowment will be to recognize those who have made Utah Public Radio what it is, but it also brings in donors. You can contribute to this endowment, and then we know we have this regular funding coming in every year. So I would say support for that at upr.org, and making contributions will help guarantee it's that type of support that we need. And I think for me, programmatically, continuing to bring communities together and building off of that and giving voice to a variety of opinions and ideas and opportunities so that we can continue to learn from each other.
Those are some great visions for the future. I will tell you that I feel a little bit of the weight on the shoulders on that one. But as you have mentioned, there's an incredible team here.
Yeah. No worries. The show will go on.
It's that team that keeps it going. And speaking of the show will go on, for anybody who's interested, we will be having a retirement party this week.
That's right. We're taking whole Ringling Brothers, the show must go on theme. We're going to have a little circus celebration with ice cream, popcorn. Richard Hatch will be there doing some of his magic. So
free of charge.
Yeah.
Come
Thursday, 5 to 7 at the Thatcher Mansion by the Ellen Eccles Theater.
Downtown Logan. Thank you so much for joining us here for Access Utah. Thank you, Tom and Carrie.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Good luck. You've got this.
You do.